Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Episode 157.
157. Remember when we did a 76 and a half episode and we said we were halfway to 157? And
We did. We didn't record it.
We didn't record it. We got so excited. We're like, we're going to have a 157 party, and here it is. It's so great when we did episode 76 and a half. Halfway to 157.
Wait a second. This isn't the party. I thought it was coming to a party, man. Yeah. That was the 157 party.
Oh, no. It's here.
This is it. It's just three guys in a garage.
Gargoyle party.
In the valley.
Which is, you know what that's code for? A garage gargoyle
surrounded
party.
Surrounded by t-shirts and books.
Yeah.
So, hi, my name is Graham Miller.
I'm Chris Mancini, and welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds podcast. Yes. Now on the All Things Comedy Network.
Now on the All Things Comedy Network. I want to talk about a fan, I think it was on Twitter, said, the way we announced that we were moving to All Things Comedy, it sounded like parents telling their kids they're getting divorced.
Yeah, we got the tone all wrong.
Mom and Dad love you. All Things, we love you. It's not your fault.
Nothing's going to change.
You didn't do anything wrong. Mommy and Daddy just needed to move to All Things Comedy.
There's more opportunities there.
We wanted to make something clear. It is your fault. You're bad children. You caused your parents' divorce, and look in the mirror for once in your life and take responsibility. So, yes, we're on All Things Comedy. And we posted, you know, Al Madrigal's comedy special just aired. So check that out. That's part of All Things Comedy. Sort of promoting each other on that network, which is really cool. And Al's a very funny man who's been a guest on this show. And I want to thank everybody who came down to the Improv on Sunday night for the before they remodeled the bar. Did you go to that?
Yeah, I did.
We must have missed each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I had Neil came down too.
Oh, awesome! Mm-hmm. It was so fun.
It was really good.
They're saying goodbye to that. I mean, they're remodeling it, so I don't know what it's going to look like. I think it's a good thing. Ultimately, you got to change, and they needed to get newer, younger fans in there and stuff like that. But that bar, I had so many.
That's some nostalgia there.
I got kicked out of that bar once for whistling too loud by Eddie when I was drunk. And oh, man, it was great.
Did you see Bud? Because I said congratulations to Bud.
And, I didn't see Bud. I saw a million comics. And then, and then we went, they were just letting people perform. So I went on stage and Wayne Fetterman played the piano and I whistled songs.
Oh, that's great.
It was
so crowded. It's the first time to get to the Improv. It's like, we're at capacity. We can't even let any more people in.
It was really cool. And then did you sign the bar?
I couldn't get near the bar. That's how crowded it was when I was there.
They stripped the varnish off the old bar and then had Sharpies. And so all the comics were signing the bar.
Oh, cool.
It was a blast. It was a lot of fun. So, and there was a lot of,
So look for the newly remodeled Improv soon.
They did the showroom. I was that night that we performed where I headlined. That was the first night since they remodeled the showroom. They did a nice job with the showroom.
They're going to add like a podcast area. They're going to add like a lot of stuff, another showroom, another bar. And
Is the Improv moving to All Things Comedy? I think
the Improv is also moving to All Things Comedy.
Right? I mean, you guys have. I think that's their next step.
That's what they should be doing.
It's going in that direction.
Well, that, folks, is the voice of a returning guest and film fan, not a critic, Mr. Chris Gore.
Film entrepreneur. Because he's done many things in film. Run a fan magazine. Made movies, run festivals, written books about films and film festivals.
Thank you for that amazing introduction. Yes. No, I've sort of been struggling with this thing of, like, you know, people have seen me for years on Attack of the Show. May it rest in peace. And
it's canceled? It's done?
Oh, no, yeah, it was done.
Oh, no, G4 is canceled.
Yeah, G4 is canceled.
The whole network's out. Yeah.
Now, it's the only time now I'm, like, really happy I have DirecTV because Esquire TV is not on DirecTV. So I'm very, very pleased about that, which is what they changed the network from G4 TV, which was this, it collected sort of the nerd.
It was great.
Yeah, it was great. And then Chris Hardwick being smart going, I think there's really an audience for this. I'll start the Nerdist thing. And he kind of basically took that was in the zeitgeist of nerd programming and started the Nerdist, which I think is amazing and smart, and they didn't capitalize on it. And Esquire TV is going to go after a more prestigious demographic.
This is why
rich douchebags.
So many network executives are stupid.
Right.
And I know I'm not insulting anyone who's listening because you're too dumb to find this podcast you're a network executive. They have this. This happened to me when I hosted at the Game Show Network.
Right.
They do this stupid thing. Actually, there's a book about called The Warren Buffett Way, and this guy modeled why Warren Buffett has been so successful. And Warren Buffett has a name for this. He calls it the institutional imperative. corporations do this. They're going along. You have Corporation A and Corporation B. They're in the same business. Corporation A is doing great. Everything's going good. Corporation B tries something different, has a little bit of success at it, and then Corporation A goes, oh, we got to do what they're doing. No, you don't. It's fine. I mean, Warren Buffett has said this ruins good companies. And that's what G4, a great brand.
Instead of expanding the brand and building on it,
Any programming that would appeal, like, you know, rather than episodes of Cops and Cheaters, they could have run old episodes of Star Trek, stuff that would have appealed to the demographic and kept them there. So it was, I consider it an admirable failure, and everyone from that has moved on. I mean, but it was a great job for me for 8 years. Frankly, I'm really grateful. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm so grateful. It was my longest continuous job in television, because everything before I do two seasons of a show and then another two seasons of a show and I seem to be the two season guy. And then 8 seasons, I'm so happy. And everyone,
you were on that Man Show guy for a while.
I was on the X Show, which was a ripoff, which was a ripoff of the Man Show. But actually, and everyone at G4, I remember being bummed out, and I'm like, you don't know how lucky you are. You haven't had enough jobs in television or entertainment to appreciate the fact that you had a job for eight friggin' years. 8 years I mean, so many shows don't last a season.
I've seen this.
That's 40 years in dog years.
It's amazing. Yeah,
Whitney Cummings wishes she had my kind of success. That's all I'm saying.
It's so crazy because you have this specific thing. Do you think ESPN went, we should change it? No, they've been sports. We're the sports network. We do sports. We do sports. How about this? More sports. That's all we're going to do is sports. We're going to do sports documentaries. Great. Sports game shows. Great. But it is sports. They never said we need to reinvent our brand. Game Show Network was called the Game Show Network. And then they said, we're going to rebrand it to GSN. I go, awesome. So now the network that barely anyone knows about is now completely unrecognizable.
Right.
GSN could be home shopping. Like, what does that stand for? When you say I'm on the Game Show Network, everyone immediately knows what it is.
No one goes, what's on that? What's on that network?
Is it game shows?
Yeah.
Why? That's awesome.
How'd you figure that out?
Because Game Show Network was the name. I worked at, when I worked in the publishing industry, the guy there was the head of the company. It was Larry Flynt Publications, but Larry Flynt didn't run it. It was this guy, Jim Coles. And his philosophy was very simple. It's like, you know, you can have like a really fancy sounding name, but the best name is just the name should say what it is.
You're talking about Film Threat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I sold Film Threat to Larry Flynt, I was working there. Like his whole philosophy was, because I started other magazines while I was there, it's like, don't come up with a fancy, clever sounding name. The name just says what it is.
And Cars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cars magazine, probably about cars.
Yeah.
Comedy film nerds. I'm gonna guess there's nerdy stuff. Probably talk about movies, and I'll bet it's funny. So, you know, I mean, you could like branch off and be covering music or other stuff, but why bother? I think focus, actually, that's true. Like I just did a podcast about podcasts, Podcast Squared.
We've all done that one. That's a great show.
Yeah, it's a great show. So like the whole thing is, to me, secret of success of a podcast, focus. The worst podcast is an example of like, okay, ask, what's your podcast about? Oh, you know, we just get together and we talk about whatever. That's not a podcast. That's you talking about whatever. That's you having a conversation with your friends. That's not a podcast. A podcast is my new podcast, which I'm going to be launching this summer. I'm doing a spin-off podcast miniseries called Girls Eating Hot Dogs at 2 a.m.
Now, what is that about?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Very simply, it's me doing crowd work with girls who are eating hot dogs at 2 a.m. They're punchy. They're drunk. They know they're not getting laid. They're sticking a hot dog in their mouth. I'm at the hot dog stand. I smell like bacon. I am talking to them. That is my spin-off miniseries.
You're just going
podcast.
To hot dog carts after bars close?
Going to hot dog carts in Hollywood and all
Pinks.
Over.
You're gonna
Pinks
go to
everywhere. I'm just going to interview girls that... And our episodes are going to be short. I mean, they're just going to be short, interviews. But I'm just... It's just crowd work with girls.
Well, you're definitely practicing what you preach about making a very specific podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I would listen to that.
That sounds...
I mean, yeah, it's going to be short episodes. Really, and it's just dumb, like, you know, drunken girls.
Did you see on Jimmy Kimmel... I saw they did a clip of it. They went to Coachella and interviewed people and with made up band names, and everyone agreed with them. They're like, are you excited to see like Duck Hunter Fart Time? And they're like, oh yeah, no, they're really good. And they just got all these people to admit to liking bands that didn't exist. Brilliant. That's a podcast.
That yes. could be a podcast too. Yeah, I think
fake band just, names at Coachella.
Yeah, just fake. And ever no one went. No, I've never heard of them.
You might be able to do that at Burning Man too.
That's true. Oh my god, Burning Man.
All right, let's jump into it.
Let's talk about some movies. We got a lot to talk about now. Let's start with Pain and Gain. Let's get it out of the way.
Oh, I'm so happy, America, that you only gave this movie
$20 million for Michael Bay movie.
I'm so happy.
I will say I went into this movie. I'm not a Michael Bay fan, but I don't have the vitriolic hatred that Graham has, so I had to go see this movie. I went in with a bit of an open mind, thinking like, okay, well, maybe this is kind of like Michael Bay being a little more postmodern, making fun of himself and the types of movies that he makes, and kind of lets these actors it's really kind of
a funny trailer.
Yes,
it's a funny trailer.
So it's not a bad trailer, and it actually maybe
the only thing he knows how to do.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I'm sure he didn't do the trailer. It was one of those things where he went, okay, I'm going to benefit of the doubt here. I'm going to go into this movie. And I read a couple of the other reviews and like, oh yeah, Michael Bay, he's got a sense of humor. So I watched this movie. And the first thing that occurred to me is that Michael Bay does not have a sense of humor. It's actually horrible. It's when someone doesn't have a sense of humor, tries to tell a joke, and they screw it up constantly. That's what this movie was pretty much like.
And you're a rich asshole who everyone around you will laugh no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. So
oh, Michael, you're hilarious.
This movie was based on a true story of three bodybuilders in Florida who, you know, shake down one of these rich clients to get his assets and money. So it's based on a true story, which made it a little more interesting. Now, there were so many different ways you could have gone with this movie, and Michael Bay went nowhere with them. It's really remarkable.
The true story is gruesome. I mean, it's bizarre. Like the thing with the chainsaw, and then they tried to return it. I mean, that's like sick. Like,
all that's in the movie.
Like the real story behind this, which is it's shocking that people didn't think, oh, this is BS. This is BS. No, like the real story is actually more outrageous than the actual movie.
Now,
but it is funny to see, like it's effectively, you mentioned like the lack of humor. This is like, imagine Transformers with no fighting robots, just the people storyline.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was like.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that?
And what's amazing is when you've got really talented people in this movie, like The Rock, love Dwayne Johnson, Mark Wahlberg, and they can play against their character types to make things more funny. It's like, and Rebel Wilson, who's really funny. How do you suck the funny out of these three people? And then I have my answer by watching this movie. It's like, if you have a billionaire and you tell him to make a movie, and he has the mind of a six-year-old, this is pretty much what you would get. And that kind of was like, oh, you know what's funny is dildos are really funny. You know what's really funny is any shit jokes are really funny. But there's so much wasted potential here. It's really kind of – it was definitely some pain, very little gain in this movie. And one of the things that really stuck out was that Michael Bay is really, really good at a couple of things. One of them is a slow motion dolly, and the other one is telling a director or telling an actor to stand up with a scowl on his face. Those are the two things. Pretty much, that was 40 minutes of the movie, is slow motion dollies and telling muscle-bound actors to stand up with scowls on their faces. And I really thought this was kind of the kind of movie where if Michael Bay would have just said, you know what, I want to play against type. I really want to kind of make fun of myself here a little bit. I want to really trust in a funny script. I want to trust actors. And no, he can't direct actors. He can't direct scenes. He can't tell a story. So what's left? You have action and special effects. And ultimately, that's what his movies are. If you take away any of the action and special effects, there's literally nothing left. And again, this is – I went in with an open mind. I really thought that Michael Bay, he would have a great career as a visual effects supervisor. If he was just dealing with special effects, CG action sequences, and that's it, he'd be the first guy I would call. It's like, okay – now, I don't want you touching the story or talking to the actors, but I want you to storyboard this action sequence with robots.
You hit on a really interesting point that certain directors have all these amazing strengths. It's hard to have like everything. Like you can do comedy, you can do you can do action. You can actually character development. So you see directors that are good, but not in all areas. It's almost like a resource management video game where you're like, well, but if you do too much on the shields, then your energy goes down. You know, like you've got to adjust these sliders. Yeah, seriously, yeah. You've got to adjust the sliders. So it's like what you need to do as a director is really be matched with the right material, which is why I think Michael Bay actually matched with Transformers speaks to his strengths as a director. And certain types of directors too, like, you know, I would not say we would talk about like Chris Nolan, I think
the only thing I would disagree with that is that Michael Bay shouldn't be directing movies. other than that.
You're right about that. You hit it though. When you said visual effects supervisor, I thought, oh my God, that's right, because that's where he's masterful.
He's brilliant. I mean, brilliant when you go on the Transformers ride, mm-hmm. you realize that's what Michael Bay does. He makes a ride, pretty much, that shouldn't be longer than 6 minutes.
The Pain and Gain ride. What would the Pain and Gain ride
be? Fun.
That would be pretty fun.
It would actually be. There'd be a lot of tits and ass and cocaine and a lot of dumb lines and actors just trying to survive a Michael Bay movie. And even Tony Shalhoub was in this movie, and you made him uninteresting.
But Mark Wahlberg, great special effect. He was a great special effect, Mark Wahlberg.
And you know what's funny? Even in that trailer, the scene in the trailer is like, I got to get a pump. And The Rock is like going, oh yeah, get it. That scene in the trailer is cut together in a really funny way to accent the humor. The actual scene goes on way too long, and the timing is completely off. God. It's really unbelievable. Like, even little scenes like that
Michael Bay.
Completely get destroyed and ruined because there is no sense of humor. Here's the other thing.
He's clearly not cutting his own trailers.
No, there's no
way.
Some
very brilliant trailer editors are making all of his movies look amazing.
The first thing I would have Michael Bay do, if I was giving him advice, first of all, look up the word. Yeah, if you weren't going to quit, quit would be the first thing. That would be become a visual effects supervisor would be the first thing. Try to save Rhythm and Hues. Put all your money into that company and make fake tigers. the next thing I would say is that read the definition of the word subtlety.
Start reading.
Read, because nothing you do is ever subtle, and especially when you're doing comedy and humor. Well, maybe hopefully you'll never do another one, but a lot of the humor is in the quiet moments of, and that's where the subtleness is, and it's not when
it's not a Tim and Eric movie, but it was the comedy.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah, though. It was like, kind of a dramedy with
dramedy. It's like it's very dark, but it has all that movie is all about subtlety.
Now this is the kind of movie too with this story that's based on a true story. In the right hands, this could have been a really cool, interesting, dark, really dark comedy. Like the director of Bad Santa, if he would have gotten a hold of this material, would have been really interesting. Observe and Report. Mm-hmm. You know, the director of that. Any of these directors could have done put an actual spin on this movie and made it really interesting.
Like Adam McKay, that would be amazing.
Sure,
if he did that.
Darker honestly, than Adam.
I don't think. Yeah. I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
The guy that it actually happened to has done some interviews, and he's like, "This wasn't funny."
Yeah.
Like what? This wasn't a. Like I think it needed to be. I think the tone needed to be more serious. I think you can make fun of these meatheads.
Well, that's also where it fails. It's like a broad, slapsticky teenage comedy, and then it gets dark and violent and also kind of sad in a lot of parts.
And that's what they should have focused on, that, and just had – you could have cast it correctly to show these meatheads in sort of funny, but in a dark indie, in like almost like a Guy Ritchie kind of a way. You know what I mean? Like the way you
Guy Ritchie's another guy who could have done this.
Like look at Snatch, like the Bricktop character. He's funny in a terrifying way.
He's a
terrifying mobster. You know, and if you would have done it that way, and there's very funny moments in Snatch, but there's also like some moments that are scary.
Yes.
Well,
I know that Mark Wahlberg actually had an opportunity to speak to the guy who he plays in the film, who's actually in prison, and the production recommended against it. They just said, you know, he could have spoken to him and said, nah, you don't want to talk to this guy.
Yeah, because what we're doing is making a fiction out of what really happened.
Right,
we don't want it anywhere near realistic. Yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is if you're going to go comedy with a story like this, is that you have to be smart on how you make these guys look dumb. And it was dumb how they made it look dumb. And so it didn't work. And then, you know, you're having Rebel Wilson, who's actually a very funny comedian.
She's great.
Having her make, like, penis jokes. I'm like, really? That's okay.
I know.
Now, again, more wasted potential.
But my guess is on something like that. There's got to be other takes where she said, "Can I just do a couple for me?" And I'll bet that they're way better than what they end up using.
No question.
This film fits in a category of movies where I say I'd rather see the documentary about the real event than the fictionalized version, which results in this movie.
Right.
Rather see the documentary.
Yeah, because you'd be like, "No way!" And the actual interviews with people and stuff, you go, "Man, that's."
I'd almost rather see the shitty MSNBC thing they play on Saturday where it's like...
The lockup.
And it's like they've only got three still photographs that they zoom in on and play really terrifying
music. When we come back, find out how the meatheads went swimming.
Yeah, exactly. like that. I'd rather see that than this.
Yeah, and they do all the cliche stuff with, like, you know, they have the Tony Robbins character and it's like, you know, you got to get out there and go for it. You know, and like, oh my God, really? You're going to add one cliche upon another and that's like...
Michael Bay too
is impetus of like, okay, yeah, I am gonna go for it. I get what I deserve out of life, so I'm gonna kidnap this guy. No, that's comedy right there. If you play it right, that could be kind of funny.
Although my favorite, I love actually scenes like that in movies where they make fun of, like, you know, motivational seminars. I mean, right. Magnolia has one.
Oh,
I think there should be best motivational seminars via movies. That could be an article. Right? One of my favorites.
Well, Magnolia wins.
Respect
the cock.
That probably is definitely in the top three. But I would also put in the top three David Cross in a film called Melvin Goes to Dinner, where he's explaining the seminar is a new way of meing. And you just see a fraction of it. It's David Cross, a new way of meing. I love that movie, Melvin.
Or Greg Kinnear in Little Miss Sunshine. He's trying to pitch his 12 steps or his program.
Oh, yeah,
he's trying to get
it
off the ground. It's so sad. You're like,
somebody do this article. Compile like a list of motivational seminars that appear in movies and actually like what would be like the sales programs for those, right? Like what would be like the, like, you know, for $49.95, you get our cassette tape set.
Now
you get the book.
Does it count
the CB
like
radio?
Does it count like when George Clooney walks off in the middle of it? Does that count as one?
Oh yeah, the yeah, my that's backpack one. One. That's one.
That's one too. Yeah, like how
well,
big
he
is
does,
your?
He does two of them.
Yes.
You see the my backpack one in the beginning of the movie, seeing what it is, and then the second one where he walks off, which is like classic.
Oh,
that's
man.
Like when a comedian has a meltdown in a movie that would never happen that way.
I'm sure there's a bunch that we haven't mentioned. I mean, we just mentioned just off the top of our heads.
Yeah,
there's like four.
You guys post them all on our Facebook fan page. Let us know which motivational scenes from movies you like the best.
Yeah. And what program you would actually do.
Yeah.
I'd the backpack
would you do the
one.
Backpack one?
The backpack one was pretty good. Like, that was like, oh, that's the kernel of advice. Like, that's really interesting. You think about that. Like, how heavy is everything in your life? How much does your life actually weigh?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Light backpack. And respect the cock. That's what I would say.
And a new way of me.
Yes. So, in conclusion, Pain and Gain, Graham, I can honestly say you didn't miss anything.
I'm so happy. When I called you the other day and you were like, I saw it. And I was like, and you were like, it's bad. We'll talk about it. I was like, thank God. Because if I had you come back and go, Graham, it's actually funny, I'd be like, no. I would just flip out. So I'm glad that it sucks, and I'm glad it didn't make a lot of money.
Yeah, and it's weird too to see like Dwayne Johnson, Mark Wahlberg, and Rebel Wilson. I mean, they're moderately funny moments. You can tell they're in spite of Michael Bay and not because of him.
Of course, because they're those people
when they're trying to. You can tell when they're trying to do stuff, and you know, it's like it doesn't fit with the rest of the movie because it's the rest. It doesn't make any sense.
I'd rather see a documentary about the cast having lunch than see.
Yeah.
And the next movie that came out, The Big Wedding. I'd rather get married again than have to watch
Catherine Heigl.
Well, you know what Louis C.K. says? Divorce is forever.
Yes.
Divorce is forever. That's what he does in his latest special.
Got only 7.6.
Yeah.
7.6 million. Again, thank you again, America.
Thank you, America.
For not supporting these movies.
Yeah. 20 million, a little high, but still sends a message. That's
7.6 million tells me, good. Maybe Hollywood will go, whoa, we can't make wedding movies anymore. Excellent. I can't let my mom know that you're... This movie's, it's a five-minute premise.
And you know the budgets were actually probably pretty decent for these movies. Yeah. So like Pain and Gain had to be a huge budget for and didn't really get a lot for your money. Good. Whereas The Big Wedding probably was a decent budget too.
All right.
So let's talk about Mud. This movie I actually was excited to see, but we switched a little bit because I had to go see Pain and Gain. So you saw Mud.
You know, Jeff Nichols directed it. I think he wrote it as well. Is sort of this new young director, and he let me bring up all the stuff here. He wrote and directed it, and he's really only done one other film, which was Take Shelter, which was a little indie film that came out in 2011, and all Shotgun Stories. But you know, this movie, the pace of it is very slow. It's very methodical pace, which is okay, but it's a good film, and it's really...
But it's got to be deliberate, though, like a Southern pacing kind of thing.
It is. It's definitely Southern. It's in Arkansas, and it's you know, it's living on the river, so that sort of slow life, mm-hmm. which as you say, was very deliberate. And the kids in it, the main... There's two little kids. There's one kid who's like the main kid, and he's the lead, basically. And he's great. And Matthew McConaughey, like we talked about, I'm so glad he's doing this and Killer Joe. And I'm so glad he's making these movies as opposed, he should have been in Pain and Gain. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm glad he's stepping away from that. I'm sure he'll keep making those movies because he's got.
He should have directed Pain and Gain.
He's got, oh God, he would have done a better job. I mean, some of those movies, I'll say this about Matthew McConaughey. Some of those movies that he made, I mean, Ghosts of Girlfriends Past has got funny moments in it. Michael Douglas is fucking hilarious. Watch that movie just for Michael Douglas. I mean, Matthew McConaughey is playing that guy that he always plays, a slick guy with a bunch of girlfriends, but...
All right.
Sometimes when he plays that guy, I'm on board with it. This, he plays this career criminal guy and, you know, who's kind of shifty and they uglied him up a little bit. And I think he you know, I'm like, bring me more of this because I really like it. Like, I know we've been accused on this show, and this episode doesn't help support this, but we've been accused on this show of being like, studio movies are dumb and only indie films are great, which is not the case because Iron Man 3 is coming out Friday and it's going to be fucking awesome. So this movie's really worth seeing. I mean, be ready for a slower
This week
pace.
It's the case.
This week is the case. You guys know, right? It is. But like, and then all the supporting actors in it are you know, Reese Witherspoon. They don't have a lot of big parts in it, but they do. You know, Sam Shepard's in it, and they everyone does a really good job. I mean, Sarah Paulson, Joe Don Baker has a small part in it.
Now, how's the build of the movie? Is like it's slowly kind of revealed. Like it's, you know, this is not a spoiler. It's in the trailer. He's an ex-con who's just kind of hiding out. Does it kind of build like a thriller a little bit?
It is a little bit, yeah, because
but
there
it's
is
more of a drama.
It is a drama. It is not a thriller. I mean, there's a drama, like there's a manhunt and then there's cops are looking for him and then some bad guys are looking for him and that the way that unravels and kind of through the kid's eyes, through like a 14-year-old boy's eyes and who this boy is, he's already becoming... It's really interesting how they depict this kid because one of the first scenes you see in him, some guy's hassling a girl and he just punches the guy. Like, not good. I'm done with this. So this kid already he's like the moral foundation of the film, which is really kind of cool. This kid who's just sort of simplistic in his like, no, that's wrong. You know, you said you loved him. What, you got to stay with that. Like, and it was that was really cool. And I really like this movie and go seek it out. I know it's getting limited release, so if it's not playing near you, you know, find it when it's on video on demand or whatever, or you know, obviously it'll come out on DVD, I'm sure, at some point. But
and speaking of indie movies too,
I want to say this real quick. Jeff Nichols is someone we should all be watching. I think he's a
excellent
good director.
I also got a chance to see a press screening of a movie that's coming out soon called The Kings of Summer. And I'll talk about that when it actually comes out. But there is a review on the site. I posted a review, so you can check that out at comedyfilmnerds.com.
Cool. Now, speaking of indie films, since it was a light weekend, Chris, you this movie came out a while ago, but you wanted to talk about. We haven't really talked about much on the show. Was the film Rubber?
Yeah, Dave Anthony saw it, but mm-hmm. we wanted to get Chris's opinion.
I think that Rubber is just one of the most innovative horror films I've seen the last 5 years. I mean, it's incredible. It's when you read, it's one of those ones where you read the description and it's already intriguing. It's a sentient tire causes havoc in a town. So what's brilliant about it is there's an opening monologue. Cop car pulls up. A guy gets out of the trunk, this sheriff, takes a glass of water from the driver, walks right up and is looking at you. And he says, in the movie E.T. directed by Steven Spielberg, why is the alien brown? In the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, why do we never see the killer's face? And he starts saying in movies, why in JFK does the president get shot by a stranger? Every movie has elements of no reason. Why is the alien brown? No reason. Why do we never see the face of the killer? No reason. You know, why is JFK shot? No reason. Movies, every single movie has an element of no reason. That's the beginning of the film, is this brilliantly compelling, like, monologue straight to camera.
This thesis,
deadpan
basically.
Serious. The thesis for the film. He pours out the water, walks back, gets back in the trunk, and the car pulls away. All one shot. As another guy with a bunch of binoculars hands these binoculars to random people that are, like, in the desert. We have no freaking idea why they're there. The Joshua Tree, I don't know what they're doing. Suddenly, you see they're all looking through these binoculars. It's this tire that's in the desert. And the tire kind of wakes up, and rights itself. And then starts moving. And it runs over and crushes a water bottle. Then it tries to crush a bottle, a glass bottle, doesn't do it. And then you see the tire shake. And you hear this sound that is just piercing of a... And then the bottle explodes. Then it kills a rabbit. Then it kills a crow. Then it goes after people. And the people looking at all of this that's taking place with the binoculars are commenting as if they're the audience. This is boring. No, keep watching. It's every thought that you're having in your head about watching a movie while you're watching a movie, they're having in the movie, and they're speaking it. It's genius. It's one of those films that is self-reflexive, right? It's speaking about the movie as the movie is happening and commenting on itself while it makes fun of itself, and it's all about breaking horror conventions, and it demonstrates its thesis, which is, why does a frickin' tire become alive and blow things up? No reason. It is one of the best things I've seen. I'm sorry I missed it when it originally came out. It was kind of a thing that played at festivals.
Does the tire ever attach to a car, or is it just autonomous?
It is just an autonomous tire. I mean, I don't know how they did it. I mean, it could have been a digital effect for all I know. I'm sure it's just some remote control thing, but the way it moves...
If they can do a tiger, they can do a tire.
Right. I mean, it's anthropomorphized in the sense that, you know, like you're like, you can tell that it goes up to a thing of water. You can tell by the way it moves. It's apprehensive. It's feelings like you're ascribing emotions and feelings and motivations to a freaking tire.
Oh, that's great.
And it is, it's also like the use of sound. It doesn't, one of the worst things in horror movies is when they, because there's only two scares in a horror movie. There's only two types of scares in a horror film. There is the wind up scare, which is the, oh my God, at their feet, the monster's at their feet and they're playing cards at the table and we don't know what the monster's down there at their feet. What's going to happen? It's like you're winding up tension. It's a tension scare that's wound up. Then there's the other one, which is the boo,
right?
Which is like a cat coming out of a closet, and it's like, which is always accentuated by too loud of a
shock sound. Scare.
Shock scare and tension scare. Those are the only two types of scares, and this just rips all of that apart and destroys it. And that thesis is brilliant. It's a movie. I happen to love movies about movies or self-reflexive films. There's a whole genre of movies about filmmaking, and this is one of those that's about, it's really about audiences looking at films. So I think that the Comedy Film Nerds audience would really appreciate this. And it's also gotten me in a habit. You were talking about all these releases.
Looking at tires.
But, you know, this was one of those weak weeks in movies. I was really...
Yeah.
When I got booked on the show for this week, I'm like, oh, man, this is a shitty week. Yeah. Why couldn't I be on Iron Man?
Yeah.
I fucked up. I should have asked for a different date. I fucked up. But, what's interesting about that is whenever there's an off week like this, I've really gotten in the habit of, and it's especially now because I'm, you know, I got to pay to go see movies now. I got to pay to go see movies. Sucks. But, I, you know, I look at my what's on Amazon streaming, what's on Netflix streaming, mm-hmm. and Amazon's got a program now where they're putting pilots for TV shows on there, and if you like them, that's make the shows.
This is the future, right?
This is the future. So they've got like now this a whole slate of their television pilots that they've produced. And one of them
audience is your focus group.
Yeah.
Now.
The audience now is, yeah. Let's bypass all that.
God.
The market research, all that. Like,
you mean you don't want people from the methadone clinic who got nowhere else to go to decide on whether your show gets picked up or
exactly.
not?
Exactly. I mean, and a lot of that's happening, changing now. I mean, like, for example, the television show Adventure Time, which is one of the weird cartoon shows that appeals to both an adult audience that will get the jokes that are, you know, over kids' heads, and then little kids. That show, unbeknownst to a lot of people, started on YouTube as a series of YouTube videos, which you can still see. So I like this idea of, I mean, it's weird with movies because movies just come out and it costs so much to market a movie. And I really think that, they have not figured out a way to market movies inexpensively. It's for a movie to get a theatrical release and actually get some notoriety, it costs too much
money. You've got to buy buses.
You gotta buy
billboards, yeah.
And you gotta buy Twitter sponsored, hashtags. I really like the more democratized arena of the internet where you can put stuff out there, and if that is able to gain an audience and people see it and like it enough to tell their friends, that's an endorsement. Is an endorsement that's an unpaid endorsement. You know, me telling you, and that's why I'm saying me telling you. I think Rubber is something that you guys should see, mm-hmm. and I hope you do see it and discuss it on a future show, because it is really one of those films that deserves to be championed. That it's I really think originality and uniqueness should be championed when it's successful. You know,
yeah.
Pain and Gain. It's, is it original? Is it, I don't know. Is it, Michael Bay? No monster robot punching each other? I don't know.
The Big That's Wedding, though. No the one's ever wedding, done a wedding.
But Rubber, a sentient tire that blows shit up with its mind?
No one saw that movie go, oh, that was just like blank.
Well,
no one said that after
like
seeing
nothing.
That movie.
The thing you don't know about Rubber, it is based on a true story. The actual Rubber is in prison, mm-hmm. and the Goodyear tire.
But I just
tried to block the movie being released.
Just please seek it out. I know it's, I believe it's Netflix streaming.
Sure.
It's one of those that is, viewable, and it's so well worth it. See, now I want to get the DVD so I can see if there are extras on it, because I want to see what was in the mind of that director. I've never heard of
the other director. His name is Quentin Duplex or Duplo or whatever.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's French, because I saw at the beginning there's all these companies, and it's like Canal Plus. It's like all those billions of logos that are at the beginning of
foreign funded movies, right?
Some, all movies,
the lottery now. Plan from right. whatever country. Yeah, he did this other movie called Wrong.
Wrong, which is coming out, which is, I've seen the trailer for, and it looks brilliant. Based on Rubber, you have to see this trailer for Wrong.
Okay.
It looks, because I haven't seen the movie yet.
The guy's...
He loses his dog and kind of goes on a quest to find it.
Yeah, and it's...
But it's also one of those that, just from the trailer, you go...
It's on demand.
It's incredibly...
You could catch it on demand right now.
Oh, wow. So I don't know if my DirecTV has that on demand. There's sort of different on demands.
Yeah, there's no question. Each company kind of has whatever their exclusive is, so...
But Wrong, right. I will
you
seek out
you can never get everything.
All right, let's go into... We want to talk about your podcast a little bit and what you're doing with that. And then we talked about before the show how, and this kind of goes into what you just talked about with this crowd voting and crowdsourcing of how Hollywood blockbusters have changed, because you've been involved in film in one way or another for 20 years now.
Yeah,
so you've seen everything change. So talk about that.
This should be a discussion with all of us. The landscape has changed in this sense. It ain't about America. It ain't about the U.S. I don't mean this in a xenophobic way. It's just like, it's about, in order for a blockbuster movie to be successful, a Hollywood blockbuster movie must be successful. It must appeal to a world market.
Right.
That changes a couple things. One, the way movies are financed, because it must be in the financial, one, because they're too expensive to make. And two, it must be in the financial interests of these other world entities for a movie to be successful. Additionally, that, which I think is a good thing in having an international cast, I think is good. When you look at films like Inception, or even, it's interesting to me that the Batman films via Chris Nolan, involved other countries. Right, I like in The Dark Knight. It's like, oh, cool. He's gotta go, go overseas to get a guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? They go to Shanghai.
Right,
right. Or like the Ra's al Ghul, the
right.
that training in the first Batman. Right. And Batman Begins.
Well, when you have companies like Legendary, it's not just one American studio. Financing these movies, you've got basically Legendary. They're a finance company, and that money comes from
places. Podcasting has proven that too. I mean, there's people listening to the show right now all over the world. Like, this isn't just a show that you got to be in the States to hear it, and that that's changed everything too. Plus, obviously, the Chinese market. You've got over 1 billion people who, in the last 10 years or so, now have disposable income, and it's
starting to open up.
Oh yeah.
So what this has resulted in is, of course, has not changed. Is you can't take a huge risk. It's really difficult. If you look at the landscape of blockbusters, everything is based on, and rare. There are exceptions. Nearly everything is based on a pre-existing property, whether it be it's a sequel, Iron Man 3, whether it's a character that has been around for 50 plus years in comics, Man of Steel, or something based on a book. Like, it must, so for it, for a Hollywood blockbuster to even be made, it has to be a pre-existing property that has proven itself in other marketplaces, i.e. a successful Broadway play.
A board game.
Yeah.
A book, right.
Mm-hmm. Like, just, something, or a comic book that has been in print for 75 years, right? Like, something that is pre-existing, that has a built-in audience. So you have to have that element of it. And then if you're someone like Nolan, I think, who's brilliant, and we can talk about Dark Knight Rises if you want. I don't know. I'm kidding. I heard your two episodes and I love them. That was the best two-parter. I love it. That was, oh God. It felt like we suffered and loved together. But
that movie gets better every time I watch it. Anyway,
you know what's funny? I am with you. Okay, here's a test. Dark Knight Rises gets better the more you watch it, because you begin to fill in the blanks, those like questions in your head, like, well, how did Bruce Wayne get back? He's Bruce Wayne. He figured it out. You know, that's the least interesting part of the story, although that would be a funny fan film. He's in rags. He just got out of the prison. It's like, I got nothing. How do I get back? But it's not a real fun Batman adventure. He even need to go back and get his suit and his thing. Like, I got to Gotham. Can you help me just get my suit? And where did I put the plane again? The bat. We need to gas that up. I think I was working on the autopilot when I was on. Right. Anyway,
we want to talk, like, with the blockbusters now. I mean, that's true with, like, international casts, especially
Nolan,
with
Nolan
with
weaves it in a way that's organic. Like, it actually didn't feel like he was trying to shoehorn in.
It's going to be up to the filmmaker, yeah.
Unlike Looper, which I feel like they tried to shoehorn that, like, side thing where he goes and marries that Asian girl, and that's actually much bigger, a completely different cut of that movie for foreign markets, where that is a much bigger subplot and storyline.
Of course.
There's
a foreign cut. There's a Chinese cut for Iron Man 3.
There sure is.
There is?
There's a Chinese cut for Iron Man 3, yeah. It has more Chinese actors in it and longer scenes.
No, I think this is a good thing in terms of just like, I think we could do without racism. I think it's sort of, to me, that is my litmus test for someone that I will not be friends with. If someone is racist, I'm not a fan. I hate that.
Way to go out on a limb.
As someone
why don't you take a stand next time you're in here?
Yeah. As someone who just likes to date in the international scene,
say no to racism.
Why limit myself to white girls when there are just so many other types of ladies? What I'm saying is,
so that's why you're not a racist, because of your libido.
Exactly.
I like all that different vagina. Kinds of strange, baby. Yeah. Daddy's got to travel the world.
Yeah. Hey, man, don't be hating.
But what I'm saying is it then you've got different sensibilities. This is what's it's a mixed sensibility of there's something about it that feels different, right? Mm-hmm. It's not an American sensibility of American values. It's sort of this mishmash of values from different places. For example, let me give you an example that will explain this. You're familiar with Turkish cinema. I'm sure you guys have talked about that on the show.
At great length.
Yes. Yes and no.
I'm talking about the Turkish cinema in which they take American blockbuster movies, they take the money shots, meaning they take all the special effects scenes,
and then they add,
recast it with Turkish actors.
Right.
And they show
Wars and Spider-Man.
Like
and
the
stuff,
Rebel Assault, on the Death Star, but you cut to the cockpit and it's like a Turkish actor bouncing in this cockpit, like, we're going to destroy this death machine.
Right.
But what's weird is you'll look at, like, they did a Superman, right? And they did a sequel to Superman, Turkish version called. What's better than Superman? Supermen! So they have multiple people dressed in Superman outfits. The difference is this, which I think speaks to the core values of the Middle East, which might be slightly different than here in the States, is Superman kills people. Superman just freaking just kills the bad guys.
Right.
And it's like, well, I'd sort
of... I'm guessing this isn't a DC licensed property.
No. All of this is being done... Yeah, exactly. I mean, all these Turkish films, you could see a lot of clips from it. Like, there's a Turkish Wizard of Oz, Turkish E.T., mm-hmm. Turkish Exorcist, Turkish Star Trek. There's a Turkish Star Wars, a Turkish Empire Strikes Back, a Turkish... Anything that had, like, big special effects, they'll just take only the special effect shots and the music, and then just like when they cut to the scenes of people, the mm-hmm. Turkish Star Trek's amazing. They actually redo like the costumes and whatnot, and just do. It looks like a fan film, but these movies are so. But what's interesting, observing that is the values are different, and so now I think how blockbusters have changed is the way they're financed, which puts even more pressure on directors doing the blockbusters.
Well, because the budgets are now $100 to $150 million.
That's low. You know? I know. Wasn't Dark Knight Rises close to 300?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
they're even
crazy.
Higher now.
So you've got that. And then you've got sort of a appealing to values and concerns within individual parts of the world, which are
Mandarin was actually Chinese in the in the comics and stuff, and it was definitely, he was Asian. Now he's more kind of Ben Kingsley-ish.
He's Ben Kingsley-ish. Yeah. He's definitely the British Mandarin.
And then just give me his robe. That's it.
So I don't know how you guys feel about that. It's just sort of an observation. Well, looking at blockbusters, then and now, in like 20 years, it's really evolved it's just more international appeal.
Yeah,
less.
That makes a really good point, but I want to broaden out a little bit more to the actual formula of blockbusters. Like, it used to be for a blockbuster during the summer, it was like star, special effects, genre movie. Whether it's, action, horror, science fiction, comic book. That always seemed to be like the tried and true formula. And the blockbusters, the tent poles, would either rise or fall on that formula. Movies like Independence Day, giant sci-fi spectacle.
Yeah, Will Smith.
Right. But now you have that formula, I think, is changing. Like we were talking about, Tom Cruise last week. You can't just put a star. You can't say Tom Cruise in a science fiction movie and expect it to be a huge hit.
They tried to rectify that in the movie because it's, I think it's mislabeled on the poster. It should be Tom Cruise's. Because there's
spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry, spoiler. There's a lot of Tom Cruise's in this movie.
Well, it's
interesting. Like several hundred Tom Cruise's.
It's interesting you say that because you talk about Independence Day.
Oblivion Moon?
Oblivion Moon. It? Yes, mm-hmm. Oblivion. I preferred mm-hmm. Oblivion when it was called Moon. Like that movie better.
Independence Day was an alien attack through the eyes exclusively of America. The whole world's under attack. It is only an American point of view. Whereas now, as Chris was talking about, we are seeing, and I think this is a good thing. It is a good thing because we are seeing movies because they're thinking about the international market. We have to look at the whole world and see how it would affect a whole bunch of different worlds. Like World War Z, apparently, I'm so excited to see this movie. He goes all over. He goes to Russia. He goes all over the place. It's not just, this is how I'm dealing with this zombie apocalypse here in the States. And I think that goes to how they're made. And like you say, the pressure. But I do agree, it does make it. It does make it a little bit better. I mean, some of them...
Well, maybe... I feel like they should just...
Yes and no. Yes,
yes
well,
and no. Yes
maybe,
and
it's
no.
not like
yeah.
Independence Day was some masterpiece.
Right.
But I mean, like, for that type of genre movie... I mean, obviously, and then you've got your battleships and your...
I wish you didn't have your battleships.
Yeah, and John Carter. But again, those are two sort of like... John Carter, you said, wasn't that horrible.
No.
Battleship was just unwatchable.
Yes.
But they both tanked here and made money overseas. Like, those movies did not lose money.
John Carter, I don't think, tanked as much as Battleship. But they still didn't
They both made money overseas, yeah. Man.
Now, here's I'm going to play devil's advocate here a little bit. Now, with this globalization of blockbusters and movies, and movies being funded by all different countries now, is it going to water down your content and your stories? I mean, if you have a very specific point of view from a certain country and you want to cast it and you want to tell the story in a certain way, now all of a sudden do you have an investor from another country who goes, no, you got to change that scene because of our culture here in this country.
I think here's what's happening. The blockbuster, yes. And I think the indie film, though, there's always going to be the indie film. And it's kind of what Chris was talking about, though. Like the movies like Rubber, they don't have the $50 million marketing budget to put it. So they're out there. They're being well, I mean, you know, they're being well made. You just have to find them. They're tougher to find. But again, when you find them, and this is the upside of the technology, is you can go find Rubber 3 years from now. You know what I mean? Like
it's not going to disappear.
It's not going to disappear. It's out there for you to watch it some way to see it.
When you finally discover a podcast that's talking about this movie.
But look at Afghanistan.
Right.
We still sell more downloads of Afghanistan than any other thing right now. And I'm not, the movie came out, we released it 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
people are still discovering it.
You know, so it's like, that is so cool about it. The big budget movies, the $150-$200 million movies, you know, those aren't, I don't even know that they're movies. They're entities, man. That's a franchise of toys and everything else. And
it's so, more commerce than art.
That's commerce. It is commerce.
On occasion, yeah. Art will leak in.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Iron Man. I'm so fired up for Iron Man. So.
Yeah.
Well, that was great. Yeah. That was a really good discussion.
Yeah,
that was
about
great.
That. I struggle with this too, because I feel like I don't want to come off sounding like I'm anti this. I'm saying this is how it's changed, and this is now the new world. You know, we've got the Man of Steel movie. That is the movie that I'm looking most forward to. Is Man of Steel?
But it looks
just
great.
Just to clarify, you're still anti racism.
Oh, right? I'm also I'm anti racism international.
Chris Gore, not a fan of Nazis.
Right. Right. Oh God.
It's funny. I am excited about so many big blockbusters this summer. Like Iron Man, Wolverine, Man of Steel looks fucking awesome.
Directed by a Canadian, an American icon, directed by a Canadian, played by a British guy.
Yeah.
So that's there you go. I wanna see that still. I want, you know,
World War Z, I wanna see. I mean Elysium, the Matt Damon feature. Mm-hmm.
Oh, the guy that did it's the guy that did District 9. And they said they were interviewing Matt Damon, and they said they actually filmed in like giant landfills in Mexico, and they were literally had like trash all over them. It's not a set. You know, they're literally performing in trash.
And that's, again, District 9. Completely no American stars in that movie. It was a great film.
No studio wanted it.
Like you were talking about the order of like what consists of a blockbuster, right? The recipe. And I really think that the casting's kind of, I mean, it's okay, but it doesn't matter. It's not like,
which
who's
is
big
new.
In Man of Steel?
That's new.
Which is new.
It's new.
That's a new thing with blockbusters, though. It used to be like, you can't have a big blockbuster without a big star in it. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Yeah, now you can.
Yeah. And that's why I think Man of Steel is going to be great, because Christopher Reeve was a no name.
Right.
And this guy, I've never heard of him, really.
Oh, he was
and
in
Shannon is General Zod. Wait for him.
All right, we got
him. He was in The Tudors. He was actually really good. He's a really good actor. So let's go on to DVD.
Silver Linings Playbook. This movie, when it came out, I really liked it. I didn't think it was as Oscar worthy as other people did, but it's still a good movie. Like, if you missed it, perfect time for the DVD.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But this movie, I feel, tricked me. Okay. And I'm like, I want to see a movie about a Philadelphia Eagles crazy fan tailgating. Oh God, I love sports movies. It's a dance competition movie. It's a dance competition movie. Don't be fooled. The football subplot, not even a big deal in it. It's dancing. Dancing.
Isn't it more about like
and relationships,
mental illness, and PTSD?
But there's dancing in it. I felt so betrayed. I'm like, I want to see football.
Being from Philly, I definitely have a soft spot in my heart for this movie.
It's a really good
I really liked it.
It's a good film. Like,
although I will say the most unbelievable part of that movie when they're out in a street in Philadelphia and there's no one else around. That would never happen ever. Real life.
Here's what this movie is great for. If you have like a stay-at-home date night DVD, this is that. This is what this movie, I think, is
and
for.
If you do have that, go out.
Or this fits.
Go out. Don't stay at home and go out. You need to go out. Seriously, you need to go out.
But this is a new category of movies.
Married people are stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
But this fits in a new category of movies. This is a new.
If they don't go out, they are, yeah. Seriously, if they're home watching DVDs, no, you need to go out.
Get out of your
enjoy
house.
Your lives. It's a great town. You live in a great town. Experience wherever you are.
Wherever it's a great city.
Well, the upside of this is that this fits in a category of movies I like to call movies I can watch while I'm on my iPad. I can have my iPad right in front of me and be. Yep. I see what's happening. It's fine. Just let them have their relationship. I will just flip board. So
nice.
Look at internet stuff.
The Guilt Trip. Don't think anyone of us have seen that.
No.
Seth Rogen.
I used to get DVDs for free when I had this last job. I don't get them anymore. That well is dry.
And Broken City. Didn't you see that? I think.
I did see Broken City, and it was, again, perfect DVD movie. Like taking 2 hours out of your life to go to a movie theater and spend 10, 15 bucks. No.
A little bit of corruption in this movie?
Oh, that's a city gone wrong, guy, and there's a cop caught between it. There's, it falls apart a little bit. But again, this is the perfect have on your TV while you're surfing the internet movie.
Right.
Like, it's perfect for that. Mm-hmm. So Silver Linings, if you're a dumb married couple that doesn't know how to leave your house, stay home for date night for that. My mom goes, Graham, I love that episode where you guys argued about being married or whatever.
So anyway, if you are married, take your spouse to see Iron Man 3 in the theater this weekend is what we're trying to say.
Yes. If you're and I know there are many nerd couples that listen to this show.
And I'm not talking to the guys. I'm talking to
ladies,
I know you want to see Iron Man 2. Take your spouse.
Take your spouse. He's going to want to go to this. You guys are going to have I am so fired.
Now, if you're a lady and you want to see Iron Man 3 and your husband goes, I really would rather see Love Is All You Need, you may have a problem.
He's gay. He's gay. He's gay. Your husband's gay, and you need to let him come out, and you need to find a straight guy. He's not bad. It's not because it has nothing to do with you. Don't blame yourself.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I always
it's not racist.
I always see these movies that come out the same.
Unless he's a Latino closeted gay guy, then maybe there's.
But I love these movies that come out the weekend that the big blockbuster comes out
because
they're sacrificial.
Yeah,
sacrificial lambs.
So Iron Man 3. Obviously, we're very excited to see this movie. Now, the counter-programming is the Iceman. This is the Michael Shannon movie where he's a family man, but also a cold-blooded hitman, which is also based on a true story.
It looks really good. I saw the trailer for this in front of Mud. First of all, I remember seeing an interview with this guy, the actual guy, who he's terrifying. Mm. And so you're kind of like an origin story about this guy. This movie looks really good. I'm telling you. If you're going to see two movies this weekend, make this one the second. And if you're a single girl that really likes watching Iron Man 3, you email me.
I will take you to the second movie.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we're going to be doing.
Oh, and you should probably say too, and you're not crazy.
And you're not crazy. Yeah, don't be crazy. If you're like Iron Man, you're single and you're not crazy. Mm-hmm.
How does a girl know she's not crazy? I just want to see, is there a test? How does she?
You know what? Deep down, I think they know.
Do they?
Yeah.
Deep down, they deep down. Well, no, it's if they're like, I'm not crazy, then you know they're nuts.
Right.
Like people who are like, I'm a little crazy sometimes.
Like, no, you're not.
No, you're not. You're just human and you have your moments. But the people who are like, I don't get crazy, you're the one who's crazy.
It's everyone around me that's crazy.
Yeah, everyone's nuts. Everyone keeps making everything stupid. Oh, okay. You're nuts.
Right.
There you go.
So if she says she's not crazy, she's crazy. If she says she's crazy, she isn't crazy. I think that makes sense to me.
It kind of does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, when you date women from all over the world, that's, you know, you know, you have that criteria.
Dating.
Yeah.
International.
You're a national date line.
Well, speaking of Iron Man 3, we should say this as we kind of get into the wrapping up of the show. Next week, we're going to because we were going to do a spoiler alert Iron Man 3, but we're doing sort of a crossover.
Oh, yeah, we got to mention this too. Yeah, we're doing a crossover spoiler episode with Rotten Tomatoes. So we'll have Gray Drake on our show earlier in the day on Tuesday, and then we'll go do the Rotten Tomatoes show for the spoiler episode later in the day.
Listen to us on Rotten Tomatoes next week, and it'll be all spoiler alert about Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
Crossover!
I love that.
You love it?
Yeah. It's like when it's like when Superman fought Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. That Marvel is. DC Universe. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
Cool.
And we're going to be doing, by the way, we're already planning this. We're doing...
Married couple's retreat. No racists.
International
ladies only.
An international.
Are divorced men allowed to go?
No, we're going to be doing spoiler episodes for Star Trek, Superman, and potentially some other.
Did you say Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Star Trek. Superman.
Superman.
I love it.
We're going to be doing World War Z spoiler episode with Matt Moak from the Zombie Research Society and Matt Weinhold.
Who is a zombie. An actual zombie. So you guys,
it's going to be great.
It's going to be a summer of spoiler eps. So get your nerd ears ready.
Get your spoil on.
Get your spoil alert outfits. Yeah. I don't know what those are. Yes. It's like a glad bag.
It's like you dress like the Riddler.
Riddle me this, bad boob. How did the Man of Steel end? All right. That's our show. That was a fun show.
It's pretty exciting.
And I do want to thank you guys for having me on one of the worst weeks in movies. Just like, this week really blew.
We could have brought you on a Twilight week, you know.
No, that's true.
That's you.
That's true. I would have seen it. Thanks a lot. Yeah,
thanks for being on the show, Chris. Where can people listen to your show? Find you? Where they can find you online?
You know, iTunes. Listen to my podcast, Podcrash, which every week I'm a guest on a different podcast.
And you repurpose?
And I just run the highlights on my show, and then talk about different types of podcasts that I've appeared on. And then also, I'll be doing my podcast live at Phoenix Comic Con on Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, cool!
Saturday, May 25th, 7:30. Also be doing stand-up there. I forget what place and what time. But if you follow my podcast and my Twitter, I'm at that Chris Gore on Twitter. Just go to chrisgore.com. All of your Chris Gore needs. Why would you have any? I don't have. I have needs. Why would you have Chris Gore needs? Anyways, if you want to just see what I'm up to and you like my words that come out of my mouth.
Yes.
And thank you for having me on the show.
Also,
really sincerely, thank you.
Dude, we love having you on the show. And also, Chris will be probably interviewing people at the LA Podcast Festival October 4th through the 6th.
Mm-hmm. We have an event planned that cannot be announced. We should talk about when to announce that. I think it's important.
We will announce that probably in the August-September area.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
when you have it all... When you have it all figured out?
There's a plan for this.
It is an event. It will be
an event.
The Podcast Festival.
An international event.
An international, hands across the world, non-racist event.
Right, yeah.
Married people, divorced people. We don't...
Any kind of people.
To the fans who are at the festival, there's a good chance it's something you might be involved with.
Oh, they will be involved.
Yes.
This is for the podcasters around the world and podcast fans. Everyone will participate in this event, and it's going to be friggin' huge.
We told us about it before today, and we were like, done, do it, make it happen. So if you haven't already, lapodfest.com, get your tickets. There's still hotel rooms available, although we've sold more than we did last year.
Oh really? Because I tried to get a hotel room last year. I couldn't get one. I should do that now.
Yes.
I gotta do it now because I wanted to avoid driving and just fought. So I'm gonna do that.
Todd Glass said that.
It's worth it. Yeah.
Doug Benson was like, the best thing I did was just stay at the hotel the whole weekend.
Yeah, I gotta do that. Yeah.
And then you know, last year we had 24 total shows in the festival. This year we're probably gonna have somewhere near 40.
Yeah, we're expanding. We're gonna have two more showrooms.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And the podcast lab.
The podcast lab is going to be amazing. We were talking to our sponsor,
Squarespace.
And they are sponsoring the entire room. There's going to be food, drink, giveaways. They're going to help you guys even put stuff up. Let's say, like, you know, you've never done a podcast before.
Squarespace is a website that is a do-it-yourself web design.
Yeah, they'll help you with all that in the lab, actually put it up on a Squarespace website.
Wait a sec, I'm just going to write it down, Squarespace. I've written down several things already during the show.
They're going to be running the lab, and they're going to have some really great things, and they're going to be a large part of the festival, so it's going to be great.
Yeah, so check it out.
And also, we do want to mention this too, and it's not like something you need to schedule, or, you know, if you're a new podcaster, doesn't matter how many episodes you have, you can go to the lab, interview us, mm-hmm. and, you know, we'll drop
it.
Are we going to do that thing we talked about? I'd like to hear what your listeners think about this idea of a panel. Can I pitch? We sure. talked about this panel.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of the panel would be pitch us your podcast. So, because I've been on almost 100 podcasts now,
sure.
like different shows. And I tell you, they vary from the...
Maybe we'll make it a workshop.
Come up and say, okay, my idea for my podcast is this. And then we get people from different walks of podcasts and we give feedback on your show. Like, well, here's what you got to do, or here's how to develop that idea.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Or like that you need a better name than that. Like you should do...
How about...
Come up with a different name.
How about that? We'll call it Pop My Podcast.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, because
isn't that already a podcast called that? Pop My Podcast?
Yeah, we probably should.
Someone already has that name.
Quick, Google it.
Yeah. Yeah. But just something where it's like, because I know that, like, just having gone to screenwriting festivals or pitching a screenplay is always really fun when you hear someone come up. And I feel like in order to be a successful podcast, like I consider Comedy Film Nerds to be not only successful, but also one of my favorites because very focused.
Thank you, Chris.
Comedy Film Nerd, I know what this is about. Like, I feel like... I feel like that this would be a service for
Pop My Culture. All right, so it's open.
I've been on that podcast. That's Vanessa Raglan and Cole Stratton. That's a really cool podcast.
All right.
Anyway, we're gonna do that panel.
Something, mm-hmm. where people can pitch their shows. I might have an idea for a show.
I love
it. So I would just pitch it and see what people. I do think that getting feedback is really important. You guys know. I mean, you participate with your audience. Mm-hmm. It's a really important thing to do.
All right, man. Cool. Well, check that out. Chris, you got anything coming up here to promote?
No, just follow my Twitter at @ChrisGore. Go to
Chris Gore. I'm the other Chris.
Oh, the other Chris.
Sorry,
oh, shoot, we have two Chris. I thought, didn't I already do that? You mean I get a double plug? Well, hello. God, I'm sorry.
No, it's my fault. I should have said Chris Mancini.
Yeah. We've got our shows coming up. We've got...
May 16th at Nerd Melt Theater, mm-hmm. Thursday night, 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We're doing our annual summer movie preview. Doug Benson's going to be on the show, so we will play Leonard Maltin, so bring name tags, and we're going to have another guest who we're working on.
Yes, surprise guest.
Surprise guest. And so we will all, me, Chris Mancini, and the other guest will play against each other using your fan name tags on May 16th at the Nerd Melt Theater, and there is a link on my website and Film Nerd's website to buy tickets. So buy, because it's a small showroom. It's not a big showroom.
Right,
so
it will probably sell out.
Get your tickets quick.
So I will say that we're getting more Pacify Me in, the handbook for the Freaked Out and the Dead. We actually sold out, but they will be in. As soon as you order, we'll be able to ship them out again. So I will sign and personalize those for you. A lot of new dads coming online.
A lot of people getting knocked up, so buy some baby books.
Yeah.
I will be this weekend, I will be in St. Louis doing two shows with Doug. The Late Show still has tickets available in St. Louis, this May 4th in St. Louis. And then May 5th, we're at the Zanies in Rosemont.
Are you driving to St. Louis?
No, we're flying.
See, I always like when you do those driving episodes.
Yeah, it's so
I like, they're like, sure, they're, I like those.
Those are, I love doing them.
They're really fun.
They're really cool. But we are just.
Podcar. I think that's your, is that Podcar is your, that's. That's not the name of the show, but you could be.
Call it Podcar.
Podcar.
Yeah. So check that out, and then...
I bet Smart Car would donate one
and
make it a circle.
Would.
Make
they
it
would.
A
pod. But you'd have to drive to St. Louis. That'd be really...
That's
that
five
would be,
hours.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
That, Doug won't go more, longer than 2-3 hours in a
really?
Car.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, with Graham.
He'd go 10 hours with Huntsberger, but not with me.
I just listen to podcasts. That's what I like.
Unbearable.
I like long drives.
Yeah.
That's why I listen to podcasts. That's how I catch up.
Check that out. Also, we have now, many of you have asked on the road, I don't have them with me on the road, but we have available in the store yellow Palm Strike shirts that are 3X. We have 3 and 2X now. You guys have been asking about that. So if you want to buy a yellow Palm Strike shirt in the 3X, we have that available at the store. So
we have them in stock right now.
We have them in stock right now. You can order them right now. Click it. Buy it. So, and again, thanks for supporting the store. Thank you to Chris Gore.
Thank you.
My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Don't be racist.
Don't get married.
Yeah. Oh, Graham, you getting mad at marriage is like you getting mad at Shaquille O'Neal because you can't make a free throw.
I'm well aware that it's not marriage is not the problem. The institution of marriage is not the problem. I'm the problem.
really funny.